there shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear, and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. One man, one microphone, one mission, one message. True News, the only newscast reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ. And now for the most powerful hour on radio, here is End Time Newsman, Rick Wiles.
This is True News, 1 hour of uncensored news, views, and commentary. Welcome to the program. I'm Rick Wiles. Effective Monday, April 1st, World Harvest Radio frequency 5920 will change to 9860. Also, our new website will go online on Monday. Never since the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis has the world been so close to a nuclear war and possibly a chemical war. North Korea revealed plans to nuke Hawaii, Los Angeles, Austin, Texas, and Washington, D.C. The North Korea news agency published photographs taken at an emergency meeting early Friday morning. They showed Kim Jong-un surrounded by North Korean generals watching him sign documents. Allegedly, the documents contained authorization to prepare rockets to strike the USA. Large-scale maps and diagrams were on the wall behind the communist dictator. The images show a chart marked U.S. mainland strike plan. The chart also shows missile trajectories targeting Hawaii, Los Angeles, Austin, and Washington. The news agency stated, quote, he, meaning Kim Jong-un, he finally signed the plan on technical preparations of strategic rockets, ordering them to be on standby to fire so that they may strike any time the U.S. mainland, its military bases, and the operational theaters in the Pacific, including Hawaii and Guam, and those in South Korea, end of quote. The emergency meeting of Pyongyang's senior military leaders was called after two U.S. B-2 bombers flying out of bases in Missouri carried out simulated bombing raids on North Korean targets on an island off the coast of South Korea. The B-2 bombing run follows last week's appearance of B-52 strategic nuclear bombers over the skies of South Korea. Furthermore, the U.S. Cheyenne attack submarine surfaced at a South Korean port on Friday. Yonhap News Agency reported that North Korea's missile sites have recently shown increased activities in the wake of the communist nation's threat to strike South Korea and the United States. Thousands of North Koreans turned out for a mass rally in the main square of Pyongyang in support of their leader's call to arms, chanting death to the U.S. imperialists and sweep away the U.S. aggressors. Soldiers and students marched through Kim Sung Square in central Pyongyang during a 90-minute rally today. Western intelligence sources monitoring Syrian field units and satellite images of two elite Syrian army divisions told Debka File that the troops were issued with protective gear for chemical warfare on Thursday, March 28th. The sources identified are the 4th Division, which is the Syrian Republican Guard, commanded by President Assad's younger brother, Meir Assad, and the 3rd Armored Division, which is deployed in and around Damascus. Debka File said officers and troops of the two divisions were outfitted with gas masks and protective suits for continuous combat under conditions of chemical and biological warfare. They were told to stay suited up at all times until further orders. Tank crews were ordered to check the chemical and biological filtering systems in their T-72 tanks every 2 hours, keeping them ready to function on the instant at zero notice. Debka File also said Israel has bolstered its military medical teams along the Syrian border. Debka said it's possible that Moscow tipped off President Assad that a NATO attack is coming soon. Debka also said intelligence has reached Assad that al-Qaeda acquired chemical weapons hidden in Iraq and is transporting the weapons to Syria to attack his troops. Debka also reported that Barack Obama has committed 12,000 American troops to a plan to invade Syria. The operation would be spearheaded by a first wave of 3,000 U.S. commandos. Another 3,000 Jordanian and Turkish commandos would also invade Syria, aided by 2,000 Syrian rebels. U.S., Czech, and Polish chemical warfare specialists will be deployed along with missile interceptor teams and drone operators. Pope Francis has endorsed the UN gun control treaty. The Vatican's observer to the UN issued a statement calling for ratification of a global treaty to regulate the transfer and ownership of firearms. Swiss wealth management expert Egon von Greyerz told King World News that the chaos we are seeing in the world now is unprecedented in world history. He told host Eric King that we may be witnessing the end of a 2,000-year cycle in human history and the start of a new dark age. 2,000 Jewish homosexuals are expected to march this summer in the first gay parade in the biblical city of Ashdod. Ashdod was a major Philistine city. God gave it to the tribe of Judah, but they never fully obeyed God's command to conquer the Philistines living there. It remained a Philistine stronghold and a center for the worship of the false god Dagon. Let's take a short break. Cyber warfare expert Charles Smith will join me when I return. You are listening to True News, the End Time Newscast.
Reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ, this is True News.
Serving God allows believers the opportunity to grow in their faith. Here's A Moment with Charles Stanley.
When you begin to surrender your life to Him and be willing to offer your life as a servant, God will teach you things in the Word of God you're not going to find any other way, because you will be in situations and circumstances where you need Him, and therefore you will get into the Word of God, you'll begin to study the Word, you begin to pray more, and God begins to use you in ways, and you begin to understand Him more, you begin to get to know Him in ways you would not. And when I think about, for example, most of what I've learned has been in God's Word, and oftentimes in difficult situations and circumstances, or something that God required me of, and that I knew, well, I can't do this. And if you never get out there on the limb and let God use you, you'll never discover what He will do, what He can do, what He wants to do in your life, till you get in a position that you need Him. And when you need Him, all of a sudden He reveals Himself to you in ways not going to learn any other way.
Surrendering to God and receiving His forgiveness for your debt of sin begins by placing your faith in His Son, Jesus Christ. Learn more in our All Things Are New section at intouch.org.
Welcome back to segment two of True News. At the time I record this program, the situation on the Korean Peninsula is the most tense I've seen it in 15 years of monitoring the military threats issued by that brutal communist regime. Recapping the news from the beginning of today's newscast, U.S. and South Korean militaries have detected a sharp increase in movements at North Korean missile sites. Kim Jong-un signed an order at midnight during a meeting with his top generals, authorizing them to prepare for war with America. He was photographed signing the order with giant maps on the wall showing the rocket trajectories reaching Los Angeles, Austin, and Washington, D.C. In addition to B-52 nuclear bombers, the U.S. has also deployed B-2 stealth bombers. The B-2s carried out mock bombing attacks yesterday in South Korea. Most of the world is ignoring the rapidly deteriorating situation. Personally, I think this is the most dangerous time since October 1962, when the world stood at the brink of nuclear war over Soviet missiles in Cuba. Meanwhile, DebcaFile.com is reporting that Syria is handing out chemical warfare protective suits and gear to its soldiers today. I've called upon Mr. Charles Smith to join us today to analyze the current situation. He is a leading expert on cyber warfare technology and tactics. Professionally, he has been a cybersecurity consultant to government agencies and corporations for many years. That's why he was granted a top secret clearance as a high-level computer engineer. I first met Charlie Smith in 1998 when I hosted a national security conference in Dallas, Texas, that included him as a speaker along with former Russian spy Colonel Stanislav Luna. He was a frequent guest on this program in our early years because he gave Bill and Hillary Clinton a bad case of heartburn and indigestion so often, and I thoroughly enjoyed giving him a platform to do it. If you want to know what I mean, visit the archives on his website, softwar.net, softwar.net, and examine the documents from the Clinton years where Charles Smith successfully exposed the Clintons' assistance to the Chinese military. Charlie Smith, welcome back to True News.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on board.
All right, Charlie, you and I have we've been talking for years at various times on national security issues. Personally, as I said in the intro, I think the situation in North Korea today, this is, I think, the most dangerous situation since the 62 Cuban Missile Crisis. I mean, for years, the Koreans have the North Koreans have made threats that they're going to wipe us off the map and attack us and all kinds of things. But I've never seen them go to the levels that they've gone to in the past several weeks, and especially in the past 48 hours. I really think they plan to attack. What about you?
Actually, I don't think they plan to attack. I know the North Korean status very well and follow their kind of operations for many years. I do take them seriously, mind you, though. You know, you don't. This is something that you just can't sit aside and say, "Oh, that's never going to happen." You got to plan for these things. And along those lines, to show you how serious this really is, you will recall candidate Obama back in 2008 declared that we had no need for a national missile defense, and that his vice presidential candidate Joe Biden had opposed a national missile defense, even spending one penny on it for many years. So these anti-missile defense advocates took office, cut the budget for the national missile defense, cut out the airborne laser, cut out all sorts of tests and things, cut it to the bone, almost canceled it outright. Suddenly, 10 days ago, Obama's administration announces that they are going to deploy 14 more ballistic missile interceptors at Fort Greely, Alaska, and that they are now reviewing sites on the East Coast for another missile defense battery. So, what would bring a change of heart from a diehard anti-missile, anti-military, super, we can negotiate with anybody kind of guy? What would change his mind suddenly to make him think that maybe we might need a missile defense? Could it be maybe the North Koreans have a small enough bomb to put on a long-range ballistic missile to hit the United States? Well, the answer is yes. That's exactly what the Defense Department has admitted openly, and we've been warning about that for years, despite the fact that liberals have been saying that they don't have the technology, they'll never make it there, ignore that nuclear test underground, it was a failure. Ignore that satellite that they were able to put into orbit because, well, you know, it's frantically tumbling end over end and unable to control itself. Just ignore those little things, those telltale notions that someone is developing a ballistic missile capability. So why would Barack Obama suddenly have a fear of North Korean missiles? Well, I don't know whether it's someone actually mentioned this to him, but, you know, a North Korean nuclear weapon delivered somewhere close to D.C. would not do so well for Michelle and her barbecue sandwich. Okay? He's taking it seriously because his life is at stake. Not necessarily ours in general out at Las Vegas and Los Angeles and Seattle, where, you know, California and Washington State liberals grow to the max and who are anti-defense. Keep in mind, you guys, you could get hit. And there's a guy nutting enough out there who would press the button. And his name is Kim Jong-un, the son of Kim Jong-il. He is a 20-something who has something to prove, taken over the North Korean government, and of course his leadership is basically centered around the military. And, you know, the military in North Korea, they kind of like having the bomb, and they kind of dislike having the bomb. There's a reason why they dislike having the bomb. When you obtain such a weapon, there is a matter of security that deals with it. There's also the use-it-or-lose-it syndrome. When you have a first few of these little eggs stored somewhere, you have a tendency to want to protect them. And if it looks like you might lose it, like, say, a stealth bomber flying overhead drops a big bomb and boom, they're all gone, you're more likely to preemptively use it. We discovered that with the Pakistanis and the Indians. When they finally reached a couple of hundred weapons each, that's when the sensibility starts to kick in and they start thinking, well, oh my gosh, you know, this really isn't a good idea. Maybe we need to talk. But until then, it's kind of an unstable situation. And then you also have those other little factors for their military, the negatives. Nuclear weapons absorb an awful lot of money. And that takes away from your conventional systems, which is one of the reasons why I really don't think that a conventional start to any war with the North Koreans is on the cards. Their conventional systems have been starved very badly of fuel and of maintenance. Their pilots fly on average 14 to 24 hours a year. Okay? Our pilots fly on average, and the South Korean pilots fly 14 to 24 hours maybe a week in practice, maybe a little bit more. So you could sort of tell which guy is going to have the better Air Force right off the bat. And to get all those tanks south, especially if you're trying to drive them, say, to Busan, you need a lot of fuel. Not that much fuel in the North Koreans' coffers, despite being refilled every now and then by the Chinese. So for all practical purposes, the only thing that they've really got are medium and long-range ballistic missiles. Drop one on us, maybe. Drop one on the Japanese, most likely. Drop one on the South Koreans, maybe not. It's kind of close to their own border, so it's not a real good thing to do, chemical or nuclear. On the other hand, their old adversary, Tokyo, does seem like a likely destination. It is well within range of the medium-range Nodong series, the Taipo Dong, and their SS-25 follow-on systems. I believe it's either the 25 or the 17 that they got from the Russians. Basically allow them to reach out much further, say Guam, Hawaii, and of course the Taipo Dong 2 can obviously reach here into the United States. I'll give you a cue. If they can put a satellite into orbit, they can drop one anywhere on the globe. Okay? Let's just be honest about it. It's as simple as that. Which is, again, another reason, like maybe Michelle rolled over one night, took a pause from chomping down those $500 box of chocolates and said, Barrack, maybe you need to protect me and the girls. So we have vested self-interest coming to play for a sudden change of heart in that national missile defense.
So, Charlie, you actually think, perhaps, I mean, the military and the intelligence agencies briefed Mr. Obama and said, look, North Korea does now possess the capability of reaching Washington, D.C.?
Well, if they haven't advised him of that, they're fools. Because, like I said, if you can put a 1,000-pound payload into orbit, you can drop one anywhere in the world. And if you've been working on, say, a miniature nuclear weapon around 1,000 pounds, and you're working with your Iranian buddies who are supplying you lots of money, and your former Syrian friends who used to give you a facility, and let's just say some of that intelligence slipped across the line either into China or into Israeli hands eventually, and then suddenly buddies. You notice we haven't been really yelling at the Israelis recently?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, I wonder why that would be. Could it be we're trying to do something in the Middle East for once that might make sense? Or could it be that maybe the Israeli intelligence came forward with a credible notation saying, we think they probably are pretty close to getting one?
Have you considered the possibility that North Korea and Iran are coordinating this buildup of tension because Iran is plotting a preemptive strike on Israel?
Possible, but I don't think the Iranians would strike Israel any more than the North Koreans will strike South Korea. And the reason for this is quite simple. In the case of the Iranians, keeping the war tensions high is profitable because it keeps the price of oil high. Every time the price drops below $80 a barrel, the Iranians start losing money because it costs them an awful lot with their antiquated equipment to produce oil.
That's a you're the first guest who has said that to me.
We got
to keep the war tensions high to keep the price of oil up.
Absolutely. In fact, here's one for you. The Russians are helping. Why? Well, they're a major oil producer. So why would they ship weapons, say, to Iran and Syria and support Syria to keep the war tensions high? Well, it's to keep the price of oil up there so they can keep making money. The moment that they join in on a peace effort and everybody has to settle because nobody can get any good weapons, gosh, what's going to happen? Well, all that oil is just going to flow right on out of the old wells and it'll drop below 80. And suddenly Assad in Syria and the Ayatollah and his buddies in Iran don't make any money. They start losing money. This is all a money-driven theme. It has absolutely nothing to do with their hatred of Israel. They'd like to eviscerate it, but for all practical purposes, let's do it. They would do it in a deniable plausibility status, which thus brings us to the Syrians equipping some of their personnel with chemical gear. Why would they do that? Well, perhaps a couple of those chemical dumps got overrun by the rebels, and I put that in quotes, and thus those chemical weapons that Syria produces, like some very nasty nerve gases, may have suddenly gotten in the hands of Hezbollah, good friends of the Syrians, or Al-Qaeda, who aren't always good friends with the Syrians, but sometimes are. So, you know, it just depends which group has got it, and I don't necessarily think that the Syrians think it's going to get used against them. I have a sneaky suspicion they think they're going to be downwind from wherever it goes off, and they have that deniable aspect. Oh, we didn't do it.
And there's also the possibility that Mr. Assad has been tipped off. Something big is about to happen, and he's
covering his bets.
He's covering his bets that war could be breaking out this weekend.
This is a little background on the money issue. Cyprus, with the Russian accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody talks about all that Russian money that's in there. Nobody says anything about the Assad money that's there.
Did he get it out before they stole the money?
Probably not.
You know, the story is the Russians got out, that they were permitted to take their money and run.
Well, that's because they threw such a fit.
Well, I'm sure they informed some people at the IMF and in Brussels, there are going to be some dead bodies floating in the rivers if you guys steal our money.
Accidents do happen.
That's right.
And I've dealt with the Russians. You know Stan.
Right.
Okay.
Have you talked to him lately?
No, I have not. I really miss the guy. He was a breath of fresh air.
Do you know if he's still alive?
I don't know. I really honestly do not know.
I mean,
know.
He's
if I was him,
incognito.
I wouldn't be.
Oh, I know. I wouldn't either. People ask me all the time, why don't you bring Colonel Luna back on? And listen, I don't have contact with him. He has disappeared from the face of the earth. I wouldn't even know how to find him right now.
Yeah, like I said, if I was him, I would be dead, so to speak, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But, a real good example of how we deal with intelligence and how the Russians deal with the intelligence. Back in the 80s, the Lebanese militias were kidnapping people. They kidnapped a CIA agent. The Reagan administration negotiated to send missiles, I love this, to the Iranians to get our agent back. Well, they kidnapped a KGB guy, okay? The Russians didn't send any missiles or negotiate. What they did is they sent their people in who kidnapped a relative of the militia leader, cut off certain body parts, put it in a box, and sent it to the militia and said, if you want the rest of him in one great big piece, you'll send our guy back. They got their man back. They deal with things slightly differently than we do. Of course,
right.
They don't have the mainstream media, romping all over top of them for wrapping a wet towel around a guy's head. Okay. I'm so very sorry. You know you're not going to die, but okay, you might think you're going to.
Hey, Charlie, going back to the North Koreans, they targeted, I told my wife, Susan, last night as I was finishing up on our website, I said, honey, I'm going to be honest with you. This is the worst I've ever seen in 15 years of watching North Korea. I said, we may wake up to a different world in the morning. And she said, what do you mean? I said, look at this, look at these stories coming out of Asia. I was at some of the Korean papers, and I said, Kim Jong-un has signed documents and so forth, everything. But anyway, he targeted, they wanted us to believe that he's targeting Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and Austin. Okay, I can understand L.A., I can understand Washington, D.C., but why Austin? Does Kim Jong-un, does he hate barbecue and country music? I mean, why Austin?
Actually, Daddy loved barbecue and country music.
All right, so then why does he want to blow up Austin?
This is his advisors giving him the, will it play well in the cornfields status.
Mm-hmm.
Austin represents middle America. It's like, I'm going to drop a bomb on Kansas or Idaho or something like that. So it would, strike fear in the hearts of the average American sitting on his tractor somewhere out there. Okay.
Right.
And we both know the guys who live around Austin who are just standing there going, bring it.
Yeah, right.
We can take it and we'll give you 100-fold back, no problem. The real key here is that, again, this is PR work. The North Koreans do this whenever they start getting short of cash. It's a classic move. They make a lot of noise. Think of North Korea as the crazy guy who lives on your block who threatens to layer his house in dynamite unless he gets his government food stamp check.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Everybody knows he's nuts, but you really can't do a whole heck of a lot about him because the liberal media and the liberal judicial system won't lock the guy away. But
the nutsy guy takes the chance that he goes too far one day and they come in with a SWAT team and take him out.
That's where the North Koreans play the same role here. They make these noises, but through the back channels, they say, we'll negotiate. Okay? And they do this about every 3 to 5 years at most. You'll notice they did this during the Clinton years, and then we had Jimmy Carter, who went to North Korea and came back with a piece of paper in his hand, and he declared peace in our time. They'll take the UN inspectors and stop making all the nuclear materials. That worked really well, right? Of course, we had to send them money and food. And then we had, the early Bush years where they did the same thing. Well, George II got tired of this. And the only stick that's ever been able to functionally work against these guys was when he cut off their money. He basically told the Federal Reserve to cut all ties with any bank that has dealings with the North Koreans. That basically cut off all the money to their relatives who were gambling in Macau.
Mm-hmm.
And there were screams at the top of their lungs on this one and lots of belligerent threats. But they came to the negotiating table and they tried to cut a really nice deal with us. Okay, well, we relinquished on that with the Obama guys. We're never going to do anything as mean as that. See, Kim Jong-un, the current leader, has an older brother who should have been in line but was skipped over. Well, guess where he is? He's in Macau. He's in a real nice, swanky hotel. He gambles every day with the regime money. He is, you know, basically surrounded with paid-for hostesses, and he lives a life of ease. Well, the second that ends, he's going to get antsy and want to go home. So Kim Jong-un doesn't want that to happen. Now, the Obama administration is going for the same old gig here. We'll, you know, make a show of force, and then we'll use the Chinese to negotiate another deal. They're going to end up cutting them another check, and we're going to go through the UN, which will send the North Koreans another angry letter telling them how dissatisfied we are with them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like they're really going to care. And if you trust the Chinese to cut us a good deal, forget it. The Chinese and the North Koreans are laughing all over their place with this. This is a coordinated effort between the two of them. The Chinese want us to be distracted by North Korea because that draws our military assets away from the South China Sea, which is where the Chinese are concentrating at the moment, trying to take over the Spratlys and other islands. Okay, it basically sucks us away from paying attention to what Beijing is really doing. North Korea is a puppet. There was a wonderful quote from the head of the Chinese military intelligence. North Korea is to China as lips are to teeth. And that's exactly what goes on here. They make a lot of noise with North Korea. We get sucked up into that area. And the Chinese, on the other hand, start bumping up against the Filipinos, the Taiwanese, the Vietnamese, and the Japanese in the South China Sea area. And we really don't pay too much attention to it because those nasty North Koreans could start something. You know, North Korea is to China, in many ways, what Mexico is to the United States.
What about China's threats of war with Japan? Is this more?
Now, that's a lot more serious.
Okay.
I consider that to be much more credible. When a Chinese destroyer locks on to a Japanese warship with missiles, that's a basic indication I'm ready to push the button.
And that's already happened.
Yeah, I know. They've incurred into Japanese territorial waters. They do it on a frequent basis. They have there's also a good likelihood that the Chinese and the Japanese Air Force may very well scrap either over international or Japanese territorial waters, because we've already had a couple of close flybys that nobody really wants to talk about. The Japanese are really nervous about what the Chinese are doing, and the Chinese are trying to basically enforce that the entire South Chinese Sea is theirs. It's not international water. It's theirs. They've said that before, and they will say it again. This is their national waters, and we should have permission to sail through there. And I hate to break it to them, but, you know, the limit ends at 12 miles, and that's the way the treaty works.
If a confrontation erupts between China and Japan over these islands, will it be a restrained confrontation, or will China pound Japan?
I wouldn't recommend it. China does have nuclear weapons and long-range ballistic missiles, quite capable of taking out the top U.S. 60 cities easily. And they're getting more all the time. However, the Japanese are very well equipped in their own right. and especially attempts in closer into their territorial areas, will probably be on the losing side for the Chinese, even if they throw a lot of stuff in. And it's going to hurt. It won't feel good. And I would not recommend it, but the current Chinese regime is part of the old Jiang Zemin clique, and they are very pro-military. They are firm in their belief that this is the China century, that they are going to overtake the U.S. economically and militarily and globally. Okay, we are on the hit list.
Do they have a date?
They were looking at 2050.
2050?
Yeah, 2045 to 2050 is when they anticipate that they are going to be stronger, bigger, and badder than us to the point where they can just tell us to go take a flying leap or take one in the mouth.
I've had two Chinese experts, and these are Chinese people, professors, who have told me that they have seen the date 2020.
2020 is probably the date pointing towards their dominance of the Pacific Rim around their country, in particular mm-hmm. the South China Sea, Japan, in essence taking over from us from that Asia side.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about globally,
right.
About 20 years after that, bang. They were shooting, by the way, originally for about 2010 to 2012 for that first thing to happen. But somehow certain people managed to throw a big monkey wrench into their attempt to build missiles back in the 1990s. So
let me think who that could have been.
I don't want to, shine my own buttons here, but.
No, you did a heroic job. You did you were a great patriot, and you put your life on the line, Charlie, and you exposed how the Chinese had infiltrated the White House under the Clintons, how they were being given carte blanche access to our technology, and every American owes you gratitude for what you did, and you did put roadblocks in the way of the traitors in the United States who were trying to arm the Chinese. I can remember many years ago with Charlie on the program, we used to say, folks, someday you're going to understand what has happened when the Chinese missiles, when they tell us to surrender. You're going to understand what we're trying to tell you now about this transfer of technology that's taking place with the Clintons to China. Hey, I've only got a couple of minutes. I wanted to ask you one more question on the cyber attacks on the banks. Wells Fargo was the latest one to be attacked. Any thoughts on who is coordinating these cyber attacks on American banks?
Well, gee, we just were talking about those guys.
The Chinese.
Good golly, Miss Molly. The specific units based in Shanghai and I think Guangdong are designated military ops for anti-financial work. I'd actually have to go look up the actual regiment numbers, but it's all basically Chinese-based. This is a basic practice runs. They just want to see what they can mess up and cause trouble. It also gives them cover while they do espionage operations using cyber technology. So for all practical purposes, you can look back at Beijing for this. And this is one of the reasons why we have kind of seen a little bit of sitting up in D.C. And paying attention to it. The very same executives who told me the Chinese would never do these kinds of things are now sitting with Barack Obama asking him to intercede with the FBI and the Chinese government to make them stop doing these things.
Are the Chinese doing this just to harass us, or is this, or do you think that they're going to make a move to paralyze our financial infrastructure?
It's a feely. It's not necessarily a paralysis or type of thing, but it's a touchy feely. They want to feel it out.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do the intel groundwork first, and that's what this is. They're trying to find weaknesses. They're probing, and checking things out. And they know where which places are weak. And some of them they have not exploited, and they also know which ones are very strong-walled, and they've tested them to try to see how well they work.
But if it is a touchy-feely process going on now, they're feeling their way around because they do have plans to paralyze the country.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They're too financial, communications for on the civilian side, military satellite systems and guidance systems on that side, and particular communications because of the long reach that we have to have out into the Pacific, cause havoc here, which will distract us from having to pay attention to what's going on further out. It's a coordinated effort. They don't necessarily look at cyber warfare like we do. We like the tendency to put it in two boxes. I'm either shooting at the guy or I'm stealing from the guy. Okay, one's commercial, it's just business. The other one is personal, all right? Well, they don't see that. They kind of mend the two together. I'm not necessarily shooting at you today, but I want to find your weaknesses for tomorrow. If I can steal from you today, that's a good thing. You know, if I can cause disruptions in your financial system that make people feel like maybe going to China might be a better idea, I'll do that, okay? Or if I can find out where your oil companies are planning on drilling in the next 10 years, just because I happen to be there first shouldn't be, you know, a coincidence, right? That was one of the reasons why the oil execs went up to Obama and said, you got to do something, because they literally stole the next 10-year plan from several of the major oil companies about where are they going to drill, where are the likely prospects to find. And you can clearly see, at very minimum, they'll want to buy up the land and then charge us for it to go in there and drill. At the maximum, they might want to drill there first.
You know, Charlie, last fall, I was in the Caribbean, and I was having dinner at the home of a Caribbean head of state, and he was telling me he said, Rick, he said, the Chinese are moving in all over the Caribbean. They're establishing beachheads all over the Caribbean. And he said they've taken control of our development banks. He said the Chinese corporations are getting all the contracts. And he said even worse, he said the American and Caribbean corporations are losing all the bids for major contracts. And I looked at him, I said, don't you know how they're doing this? And he goes, no. I said, they're in the computers looking at the bids. And the guy's, you know, his face just went blank. He had never, this had never occurred to him. He couldn't figure out how the Chinese were winning all these large multi-million-dollar contracts. And, you know, it was just a moment there for him as he paused and thought about how pervasive the Chinese espionage is now, you know, in his homeland. So,
well, you know, the bottom line there is by hook or by crook. Either
yes.
They'll bribe somebody or they'll break in and find out the bid and make a slightly lower bid, win the contract.
That's right. Okay. Charlie, got to run. It's been a pleasure talking to you again.
We'll be in contact again.
Yes, sir. My guest today, cyber warfare expert Charles Smith, his website, softwar.net. Charlie, thank you so much. Appreciate you being on True News today.
Thank you.
Reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ, you're listening to True News, the End Time Newscast.
This is Max McLean. What instructions did Jesus give his disciples when he sent them out to preach and drive out evil spirits? Listen to the Bible from Mark 6. Take nothing for the journey except a staff, no bread, no bag, no money in your belts. Wear sandals, but not an extra tunic. Whenever you enter a house, stay there until you leave that town. And if any place will not welcome you or listen to you, shake the dust off your feet when you leave as a testimony against them. They went out and preached that people should repent. They drove out many demons and anointed many sick people with oil and healed them. From Mark 6. Listen to the Bible. It's great for the soul.
The Bible says that faith comes by hearing. Be able to hear the Word of God today and every day. To hear more, go to radiobible.org.
Hey, welcome back to the last 13 or 14 minutes of True News for today. And we're going to get into the mailbag again. There's been such an overwhelmingly positive response to Chris Steinle and I reading mail that a lot of people are saying, why don't you just do it every day? I don't know if we're going to do it every day, but we're going to do it often. So we're going to get into some topics here today. First, though, I do want to mention something. Yesterday was a bittersweet day for Bless an Orphan in Ecuador. Two vehicles that everybody chipped in together, and we were able to buy two vehicles for Bless an Orphan, a van, a large van, almost like a small bus, and then an SUV. Those vehicles were delivered yesterday, but also a little baby Nathaniel passed away. And he came down with pneumonia, and the Lord took him home. And so Nathaniel is with the Lord. And last night, Carissa and Marshall presented the boy's body to the parents. And they had a very emotional time with all the relatives. I think there were uncles and aunts and extended family there with them. And Marshall told me today that the family was weeping and expressed their gratitude that these Americans had shown such kindness to the family in trying to help this little boy. So perhaps out of all this, little Nathaniel, his brief life of just a few weeks, maybe God will be using it to sow the seed of God's love in that village, and Nathaniel's family will come to know Jesus Christ. So pray for the family, and pray that there is a harvest of souls there in Ecuador because of this little boy's very brief time on earth. Okay, I mentioned to you our new website will be up Sunday night, Monday morning. You will see it. Also, we're at the end of the month. We appreciate your financial contributions, and there will be a brand new donation page with our new website, so please try it out. Just experiment with it, you know. See what's the biggest amount you can enter and just test it. See if it works, you know. We'd appreciate it. TrueNews.com. Hey, as I was leaving the program yesterday, I gave a very brief answer to a question from Harold. He said, can anybody explain how the stock market is so high considering all the chaos going on around the world? And I would say, Harold, the answer to it is the stock market is an illusion. It's totally inflated by the Federal Reserve pumping trillions of dollars, funny money, into the system. It's not real. This is an illusion. And so don't pay attention to the smoke and mirrors. That's why it continues to go up. This one from Joan, she has a question about scanning devices. I mentioned the palm readers on the school buses, the mark of the beast system. And I want to point out that, you know, I mean, we can't officially say this is the mark of the beast. I'm saying they are conditioning the minds of children and adults to get ready for the mark of the beast. And she asks, how will we really know which identification is the mark of the beast? Well, Revelation chapter 13 tells us he was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. He calls us all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. So there is a system coming at some point that if you do not opt into that system, you will be cut off from all commerce. And this is what they're training the children now. If you don't scan your hand, little Johnny, you can't get on the school bus. Little Sally, if you don't scan your hand at the lunch line, you don't eat lunch. They're getting the children ready for this system. This is why Christians should be resisting the introduction of this technology in their schools instead of going along with it. We got a lot of feedback, and I'm not surprised, on comments that a guest made earlier this week about Israel. And all I can tell you was I was unprepared for it. I did not endorse his views. I didn't expect him to go there. And I was caught off guard. Some people said, why didn't you challenge him? Well, confrontation with my guests is not my style. I just decided to cut the interview short and get him off the air. Maybe I should have confronted him, but I only had a couple minutes, and I really didn't want to get into it with him. But I will tell you this, he won't be back. And I just want you to know that his comments about Israel are not my views. And Pastor Chris Steinle is here with me right now. And Chris, this might be a good time. Email from Tom, he said, I think you guys should spend more time explaining the real Israel to the listeners. Can you do that in 5 minutes?
Well, I'm pretty sure that I'm part Jewish. I have a little bit of that complexion and nose and some names on the maternal side of my family that would cause me to believe that. And I love the land of Israel, very pro-Israel, have visited, toured, I've taught there all over the place, from Mount Hermon down to Zin and all points in between. So just absolutely love the place. And, when I think about this, I want to point out something to do with what I hate to say this, Rick, because I'm going to talk about the different views of the rapture. And, I want people to understand that I have believed many things about the rapture, and I love my fellow Christians. I simply believe something different now than what I used to. But when it comes to Israel, this is a point of just a real emotion for me. People who teach the pre-tribulation rapture theory use John Nelson Darby's dispensationalism to divide up the Bible into verses that deal with the Jews and verses that deal with the church. And they would say that you are really not honoring the Jews unless you give them some time at the end after the church is gone for God to fulfill his promises to them. You're familiar with this, Rick.
Yes, sir.
I'm sure.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, first of all, Paul says there's no longer Jew or Greek. Is that true? Paul writes in Ephesians 2 that they have both been reconciled through the cross, and that God has taken the Christians and the Jews and made one new man out of the two. Again, Paul says not all who call themselves Israel are really Israel, but there is a remnant of Jews who are elected by grace that are the true Israel of God. Then in Romans 11:7, says that Israel has not obtained what it seeks, but the elect have obtained it. Listen again. Israel has not obtained what it seeks, but the elect have obtained it. So the Jews who believe in Jesus have become part of the church, and the Gentiles who believe in Jesus have been grafted in and have become part of true Israel. So believing Jews and Gentiles have become one new man. And I would say, what God has joined together, let not man separate. Because when you try to separate what God's joined together, you're going to end up with a big mess. So let's talk about the pre-tribulation rapture plan for the Jews. What is the special time that they say God has reserved for the Jews? It's the most horrendous time that has ever come upon the planet, the 7 years that the pre-tribbers expect to be spared from, because God would not allow his church to go through it. Here's how the pre-tribulation gang sees God's blessing to Israel. After serving as slaves in Egypt, being taken captive by Assyrians, slaughtered by the Greeks, oppressed and driven out by the Romans, suffering persecution all over the world, going through Hitler's Holocaust, and even now having to fight for their tiny piece of promised land. And after all this, that God is going to bless them in the end by subjecting them to the most horrific 7 years in the history of the world. That's how God is going to bless his people? What a slap in the face. You've got to be kidding. This is the time of blessing that God has reserved for his special people. Then after this terrible time that God wouldn't let the church touch with a 10-foot pole, then the church comes back for 1,000 years of earthly bliss. Well, Rick, how about if the thousand-year millennium is the time when God fulfills his promises to the Jews, wouldn't that make a whole lot more sense than giving them 7 years of hell on earth as their big blessing?
That's an interesting point. I don't think I've ever heard this from anyone, Chris, that with the Israel First pre-trib choir, who clearly say the Jews are God's chosen people, then they turn around and say, but God's going to make them go through the tribulation, but we, the Christians, are not appointed under God's wrath, but the Jews are appointed to God's wrath. It really is convoluted, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And that's what happens whenever people start segregating the Jewish people from the rest of society. So when the dispensationalists separate the Jews from the church, the Jews, like usual, end up with the short end of the stick. You know, one of the verses that they use is in Romans, and it says that when the time of the Gentiles is fulfilled, that Israel will be saved. They're going to be delivered. Not the church, the Jews. But the pre-tribbers teach that when the time of the Gentiles is fulfilled, the church will be saved. That the church will be delivered out of tribulation, and the poor Jews will get left behind to get beat up one more time.
And if you really follow their logic, the Gentiles, all we get is Jesus, and the Jews get a piece of real estate, if you follow their logic. They elevate real estate as higher value than Jesus. I mean, if you really listen to what they're teaching, they're saying, well, the Jews are going to inherit their land, and they get finally the rule from their land. But, you know, the Gentiles, all we get is Jesus. I'll take Jesus. You know, I want Jesus, you know, you know, Chris, I know we're only down to 1 minute here, but, you know, in the entire New Testament, there are no promises of physical, political Israel coming back. Why didn't Jesus talk about it? Why didn't Paul talk about it? Why didn't any of the apostles talk about, hey, in the last days, you know, there's going to be a political state called Israel is going to come back? It's not mentioned anywhere in the New Testament. Why is that?
Well, if you're going to try and break it out and separate it, here's a way that fits a whole lot better. What if the time of the Gentiles is everything up until the millennium, and then all Israel is saved? Because going through the tribulation is not my idea of being saved. How could it possibly honor the Jews to say that the church would be rescued while the Jews would be left behind to go through the tribulation? Folks, this is sick. It's nothing less than bigotry. But they say if you're not pre-trib, you're trying to keep God's promises to the Jews from being fulfilled. Rick and I believe in God's promises and that they'll be fulfilled. It's the pre-tribbers dispensational matrix that we have a problem with. So stop already with trying to do the Jews a favor by giving them the tribulation. They don't want it any more than the church does.
Well said. Interesting point of view. Listen, the way I see with Israel, the very first believers on the Messiah were Jewish. The whole church in the beginning was Jewish. That was Israel. The Jews that refused to believe opted out. They dropped out of Israel. Israel was made up of the Jews that believed on the name of Messiah. And it's not replacement theology. It isn't that the church replaced Israel. Israel and the church have always been one. We as Gentiles have been grafted in to the true Israel, the ones who are believing on the Messiah. We love you. We'll see you on the next edition of True News.